We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, still over there in very cold Chicago, Illinois, Dan Rubenstein. How you holding up?
I'm good. I'm making pizzas. I work out inside sometimes, and Gus Malzahn is a UCF legend. Of course, I'm great.
Gus Malzahn, you kind of stole my thunder there because I was going to play our breaking news sound. We'll play that in a second, okay?
Okay.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com, as always, is the email address. Don't forget to follow along on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the usual hotspots. We've added a Twitch in there. I played a game this weekend. Felt pretty good to shake off the
How'd
rust a little bit. Doing okay. We're now in year two of Navy. Started out 2-0. Okay. Got a prime, like, 4-star recruit to come to Navy and play quarterback.
Whoa,
more of a drop-back passer.
Whoa. And serve his country.
Things are changing, man. Things are changing. We're working on it, but got a Twitch.
The rebrand. The great rebrand.
/SolidVerbal.
Have you been fielding any offers to become a new team's head coach?
Not yet. No.
Oh.
We went 6-6 last year, so the new offers aren't exactly too plentiful right now.
How loyal do you feel to the midshipmen?
I feel like I'm in this for the long haul. I'm in it for the long haul. At least for the next 2-3
years. Niumatalolo brand. Okay.
Shedding that brand, man. Going fresh here. Airing it out.
I like it.
Of course, we do have a Patreon as well at verballers.com. Now, listen, this is breaking news hot off the presses. I'm not going to play the sound. If you go on out to verballers.com, if you look at our tiers, you'll see that one of the things we're doing in the offseason is reverting back to a concept, a thing, a topic list that has long been very popular in the verballerhood. And that is the off-topic content, Dan. We've done a couple shows like this over the years, and it seems each time we do, it gets a little bit more popular. So you'll recall we did, what was it, the pop, punk, and emo show with Bill Barnwell a few years back.
I think all of them have been with Bill, right?
Have all of them? I don't think all of them have
been. I think we did sports video games with Bill. We did pop, punk, emo.
Internet things we did do with Bill.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
we'll do at least one of these in the spring with Bill, period.
As part of what we're doing on Patreon, we're going to be doing one of these per month. It's a Patreon-only release. The release this week is going to be you and I not only deep diving our historic careers as youth and or high school athletes, but also talking about where we feel right now about youth and high school athletics, right?
Of course. Oh, there's so much. So there's our personal stuff. There is the general archetypes. There are just, I mean, that we have to dip in on what it's like now, right? Just to see what that world looks like in the present tense and not just what it was in like 1996. So youth sports and everything surrounding. So we're going to talk what? Okay, so it's our own experiences. We're talking getting to and from games, teammates, snacks, practice, games, facilities, equipment.
That's right.
You name it, we're going.
Every kid's got their own baseball helmet now. What is this world coming to? Yeah.
Gen Z.
Verballers.com, one more time, is where you can find all that info on the Patreon, Dan. So we got a Tuesday show, a Thursday show, and then the off-topic show is going to drop a little later on in the week for the Patreon subs. And only the Patreon subs, Dan.
Yeah. Exclusive.
Today's show, we are talking about what happens if hell freezes over. You may be wondering, why are we playing an 8-bit version of Hotel California? Dan, care to explain yourself?
I myself am wondering, too. The Eagles had a Hell Freezes Over tour.
That's
a reunion tour. Like, they're never going to get back together until Hell Freezes Over. And then they got back together and called it that. Have you seen the Eagles documentary, by the way?
I believe it's just
called The Eagles. Ty. You need to see the Eagles documentary.
Why?
Well, first of all, there's so much acrimony and hate in the band that it's like it's a two-part, like 4.5-hour documentary. And the first part is the original story of the Eagles, like how they came together and they had these common friends, and this is what recording this seminal album was like, et cetera, et cetera. And then the second part is later stage Eagles. And I'm not even a big Eagles fan at all. I just like wild stories about 70s and 80s rock, I guess. And the second part is like they just hated each other and kept going on tour because people kept wanting to see them. You have to watch it. Let me see where it's streaming. The Eagles documentary is streaming. It looks like Amazon. You can watch it. Yeah, you can watch A History of the Eagles on Amazon.
This is how you know it's the offseason here on the Solid Verbal as we talk about Eagles documentaries. But
It's insane that you don't have like well-formed Don Felder thoughts.
I may have an appetite for a show like that right now.
I think you need it.
Another topic for one of our off-topic shows.
Hey, maybe we'll just do a documentary episode.
I'm down with that. Okay. So today's show, Hell Freezes Over. We've been doing the thing the last couple of weeks. By the way, we're totally steering into the whole cold theme right now. I was trying to harvest the day after tomorrow, trying to find some clips out of there, because you recall there's that deep freeze scene, but there's like no good sounds in there that I could yank. So I'm glad we went this direction instead. Anyway, look, we've been looking at teams that are down and out or teams that are on the cusp for the last few weeks now.
Right.
Of course, we had the Valentine's show, but that's long gone now. This one, we're looking at from a different perspective. We're so used to talking about teams that are low. What do they have to do to get to the promised land? What about a team like Alabama? A team like Alabama, a team like Clemson that has ruled the roost for, recent memory, all of recent memory, Dan.
Purdue.
What has to happen? Not Purdue. Yeah. What do you say? What has to happen for hell to freeze over? And for a team like Alabama to come crashing down to earth.
Loosely connecting real world events that affect us personally to college football vague concepts. It's what we do here, Ty, on the Solid Verbal. It's what we do.
That is the anthem of the offseason. Before we do, though. Breaking news! Not going forward like I usually do, but still getting halfway there.
Okay, what do we have?
Gus Malzahn is back, baby. UCF has named Gus Malzahn its new head football coach. You'll recall he was fired back in December after 8 seasons at Auburn. He went 68-35, was 39-27 in SEC play. Obviously took Auburn to the national championship game in his very first season back in 2013. He emerged really just this weekend as the leading candidate to replace Josh Heupel, takes over at Tennessee. And he has now officially gotten the job. Quote, I'm thrilled to be the head coach at UCF, and I truly look forward to being part of Knight Nation. Thank you, Gus. So, look, say what you want about Gus Malzahn. This is a good hire, I think, for UCF.
Yeah, I agree.
I think this is a splash hire to go out and get Malzahn late in the cycle to bring a guy down there who, look, there's a incredible amount of talent in South Florida that he can work with. We know he's got an offense that's very attractive to skill talent. And again, UCF seems to find a guy who can come in and do the thing on offense. If nothing else, they will be very exciting to watch when they have the football.
Correct. Some mixed results in hiring assistants at Auburn, but the track record is overwhelmingly positive, even with the mediocre down years and the inconsistencies and the struggles finding and developing quarterbacks at times. Certainly, there were highs to the Jarrett Stidham era and Cam Newton. And, you know, you look back and there were some really, you know, Nick Marshall. They're promising dudes. But I think what he'll be able to do at UCF is continue the successes. I don't know how, you know, if he goes 11-1 at UCF this year, next year, whatever. I don't know how long he's going to be there with how much turnover there is among the SEC and I guess ACC coaching ranks if he's going to stay in the Southeastern footprint. But yeah, kind of seems like a no-brainer. Should be able to recruit very well, has recruiting connections across the region. And Lord knows that there are going to be transfers available from Miami, Florida State, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, Georgia Tech, that kind of thing,
yeah,
to help populate that roster. So I would imagine UCF is going to position itself very well. I'm curious to see who he hires to round out that staff. But yeah, UCF is one of those jobs, one of the group of five jobs, along with, I suppose, Houston, that geographically has positioned itself in a really nice place. Memphis, Boise State doesn't have the geography, but has the track record of winning, going to Tennessee, South Carolina, schools that aren't necessarily set up infrastructure-wise, roster-wise to succeed. Whereas, you know, inheriting Dylan Gabriel's pretty good start, if you're Gus Malzahn. So I expect impressive things from Malzahn and the Knights.
I do as well. Any other news here jumping out to you?
Penn State's losing, it looks like, Tony Banks, co-DC. So he's been with James Franklin, Brent Pry. I think he's a secondaries coach as well, or a safeties coach for Penn State. Looks like he's going to Tennessee to become defensive coordinator for Josh Heupel. Just a connected world. Do you have strong Tony Banks opinions?
No.
Okay.
Kind of a bummer.
Penn State's
though.
Defense has largely been good.
Kind of a bummer to see him go, but nonetheless.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's always a good sign. I will maintain this. Always a good sign to have your coaches hired away from your staff instead of having to fire them. You don't have to pay them. You get paid, and it's a good reflection on your head coach in terms of hiring practices. So that's, hopefully it all works out for Tennessee. I saw Oregon's 2020 starting quarterback, Tyler Shuck, announced his entry into the transfer portal. It's certainly seemed like that job was going to be wide open, and I know I and a lot of Oregon fans had high hopes for him going into this year with Joe Moorhead, and it seemed like his numbers, I think, don't tell the full story. At times he did struggle, and it didn't seem like the long-term answer for Oregon, but I hope he finds a good home somewhere else, be it on the West Coast, wherever, whoever. A lot of teams need a hopefully quality quarterback, and he is at his best, a quality quarterback. So hope it works out. And I think he's immediately eligible. I think he has, both because of the way that eligibility has worked after the 2020 season and because of how quickly he graduated. I believe he has 3 years of eligibility remaining. So a Brady White situation, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is great. I hope it works out. I hope he finds a place and locks in and is a good quarterback.
All right.
But Oregon is, I think, decent enough in terms of depth at quarterback right now. Looks like Anthony Brown's probably going to start the season, which I hope is good. I hope somebody who is inconsistent and tore both ACLs at Boston College works out, surrounded by better talent. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that a better situation, I mean, he's going to be surrounded by a number of talented receivers and now experienced offensive line, as Joe Moorhead calling the plays, and they have a couple of blue chips behind him, including one true freshman who's pretty well regarded in Ty Thompson. So we shall see. We shall see. I don't think you're going to the playoff or winning a national championship necessarily with that quarterback room, but incremental improvement is always good.
Anthony Brown. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll see. Let's get to our game, Dan.
Let's do it.
Hell freezing over. So I think we have to come to an understanding here right out of the chute. We've got a handful of teams listed. We've got Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Oregon, Notre Dame, Georgia. So what, seven teams? What we're asking here is, what would it take for each of these programs to spiral out of control and at a minimum fall down from the pedestal where they currently find themselves? So, like, we could start with Alabama or Clemson, since those are the two most obvious ones. But I think we have to ask, first and foremost, about each team, what happens if the coach leaves? That's the most obvious thing. That's the low-hanging fruit. We're not going to do the thing where we talk about rules infractions, because rules infractions could obviously be an unforeseen event that affects any of these schools in a very negative way. That's also low-hanging fruit. But beyond that, I have some thoughts here on some of these teams. I know you do as well. Why don't we start with Alabama?
Should we define what we mean falling from glory and hell freezing over and careening back down to earth?
Sure, so like, sure.
From glory to Gasparilla.
Glory to Gasparilla.
I'm not saying that a team is going to utterly collapse and get the death penalty, English, go 1-11, but you go from winning double-digit games to 7.2 to 8.1 games a year over a seven-year span.
It's like a Miami situation. We talked about Larry Coker.
Yeah, I mean, all of these teams that we've listed have careened back down to earth at some point for
and
various reasons.
That, I think, is an important point that I wanted to remind everyone of.
Yeah.
Even though it seems like there is no possible way an Alabama or a Clemson or an Ohio State is going to come back down to earth, we have seen it time and again. It happens. It's going to happen again for all of these schools without fail.
Yeah.
We can discuss all that here, but it will happen at some point.
It goes without saying, like you mentioned, that not only do you have to talk about coaching changes, but yes, let's get it right out of the way right now. If any of these schools loses a coach and hires a bad coach, it can very easily happen. I think we need to go into some more detail on a more granular level, like what specific to these schools could lead, because Ohio State's context is very different from Notre Dame's context and Oklahoma, Oregon, Bama, Clemson, Georgia, whatever. Even though, you know, there are some overlaps in terms of conference with, say, Clemson and Notre Dame this past year, or Alabama and Georgia, whatever. What we're going to get specific to those schools, because there are certain, like, oh, you start a bad quarterback and you became bad. Yes, that happens to everybody. That happens to literally everybody. We're going to try and avoid the layups, the guppies of an answer as best we can.
So, okay, let's start with Alabama. Alabama, your national champion, Nick Saban, greatest coach of all time. Nick Saban leaves. Nick Saban decides.
Well, could you give me Saban stays and they careen as well? Do you have that within you?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think it needs to be said that if Saban leaves, I don't know if it careens out of control, but that's probably the best chance of it happening.
Right.
Agreed?
Sure. Of course. Yeah, yeah. Obviously.
Bama is so well-rounded at this point that you can't just point to, like you said, a bad year or two at quarterback, and that being the tip of the iceberg that leads to the downfall. I think the angle here is more centered around recruiting, particularly with teams around Bama getting good enough that it's harder for Bama to recruit. So, for example, we talked about Miami, how Alabama was moving into that South Florida territory, building a pipeline for itself, and siphoning off some of that top talent. But if Florida State gets better, if they rise up, if Florida can continue its trend, if Georgia can continue its trend, if Miami can reclaim the swagger, there are a lot of ifs here, This is a game of hypotheticals, mind you. Even if Gus Malzahn can come in and poach a couple kids, more recruiting competition for that talent over a couple cycles, I think is one way that you could start to see things trend in a different direction.
I don't think that's based in reality, because
I mean, none of this is based in reality, but continue.
No, there are certain things about Alabama that are based in reality. The things that are based in reality about Alabama is an influx of quarterbacks slash systems slash coaches doing interesting enough things to undermine Nick Saban's ability to coach an 11-12 win team consistently because of innovation that Nick Saban has generally capitalized on, but he hasn't been at the forefront. He hasn't been at the forefront of running the spread. He hasn't been at the forefront of playing up tempo, of using RPOs. You know, there was that inflection moment or moments when we were talking about the SEC banning, you know, how quickly teams can play and saying, you know, is this what we want football to be? So I think what it is actually innovation, because I don't think anybody's going to pay closer attention to the little things that Nick Saban does, because he keeps having to overhaul his staff every year and nothing changes. They just keep winning national championships or vying for national championships. They're in that playoff conversation. They're of that caliber. So what it is essentially, I don't know, Tennessee and South Carolina and LSU each find their own version of Hugh Freeze's system slash Johnny Manziel slash the combination of Steve Spurrier and Steven Garcia, guys like that. I think if we get a perfect storm of that every year, I think that's the closest thing, because I don't think the recruiting is ever going to fall off. The track record is too vast and too deep that no coach, is there a coach right now that could come in to the SEC and say, my track record is analogous or within arm's reach of what Nick Saban has done in terms of winning and developing NFL caliber?
He just signed the best class of all time.
Right. So being out recruited or seeing recruiting fall off in an appreciable way, I don't think is based in reality. I think it's much more that more and more talented coaches take SEC money. Like if Ed Orgeron doesn't work out, all of a sudden LSU hires Lincoln Riley and all of a sudden they become unbelievable killers in a way that they only were that one season with Joe Brady and Joe Burrow. Like I think that's where we're heading, that the conference becomes so stacked and top heavy with coaching and quarterback and overall talent that the conference just can't help but to beat itself up.
Yeah.
Outside of that.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
I think it has to come from within the SEC, too, from within the walls.
Yeah, the call's coming from within the house.
Within the walls of the SEC is the best chance of this conflict rising up. Because, look, for college football fans, at least to some extent, the Clemson rivalry between Clemson and Alabama, it's still interesting, maybe not as interesting as it used to be because they're in it every year, but that is not going to destroy Alabama. What would really take a toll on Bama is if it found a counterbalance somewhere else in the SEC. And to be fair, everybody in the conference has ripped their hair out for the entire Nick Saban era trying to figure out how to get to be that counterbalance. No one's really done it consistently yet. I think at a minimum...
And the ones that occasionally do are only that dangerous for blips.
LSU
Texas
last year.
Texas A&M couple years. It's LSU for a season, or they are kind of half a team with an amazing defense, but they can't put it together consistently on offense. But they didn't cross the 50 in a national championship after beating Alabama 9-6 earlier in the year. It's Ole Miss imploding under Hugh Freeze. It's Georgia not quite getting over the hump. Teams like that where nobody's been able to put it together with any sort of consistency, with Auburn being the closest, and they still fired their coach.
You know, the combo of LSU and A&M in the SEC West is really interesting to me.
Sure.
That's really interesting to me. And I do think that Jimbo Fisher is slowly but surely going to build up A&M. We'll see what Orgeron could do. He had a tough year, a lot of turnover, obviously, weird year with COVID. But, you know, provided they can continue to build those programs, that would be some interesting competition for sure. For Alabama. I mean, it already is, but to see those teams take their game to another level would help this argument.
Well, isn't there also still the, even teams that lose consistently in the SEC, with some exceptions, generally have an appealing element to their team, be it the Kentucky defense, be it, you know, how feisty, I suppose, in an unquantifiable way, Arkansas was this year with a real quarterback and an improved defense. And Mississippi State forever had like this kind of dangerous offense with at times an NFL quarterback and Dak Prescott. Like there are always elements. So I think if the competence floor is raised in that every week Alabama plays a team who's at least very good at 1.3 things, that becomes interesting. That becomes quite interesting. Alabama's still going to win 10 games a year, but if that opens Alabama up to losing 15-13 to Arkansas one random weird year,
yeah, right,
that changes things. That changes the calculus. But we're talking about something that still remains 5 steps away.
Well, exactly. And you know, so, one yeah. other thing here about Bama, and then we're going to move on to Clemson. And here's why I bring this up.
You need to also tell me, is there anything internal about Alabama that would worry you?
Internal?
Right. So we internally at Auburn, that there was pressure and there were factions, and Alabama, there's a ton of pressure to win. And so obviously, if it were going to happen by now where Nick Saban didn't want to deal with the internal politics, both within the athletic department and the booster community at Alabama and everything going on, he'd be gone. But he has organized all those things behind him in lockstep. So I think that's it. I think that's it in terms of internal hope, because a lot of places it's not wanting to deal with the politics, relationships running sour with the AD and with whoever, the chancellor. And then a coach will find a way out to go somewhere else.
I just
else.
Don't see that for Saban.
Hard to see. Yeah.
He's a legend. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, you know, one of, I think, the common themes that we'll have, certainly with Clemson, I at least want to discuss it with Clemson and some of these other schools mm-hmm. here, the prospect of assistant coaches leaving. That's yeah. not as
has,
big
hasn't
a deal.
Affected Bama.
Not yeah, as big but. A deal for Bama, right? They are maybe
not a
by
deal at all.
Sheer force of will from Nick Saban and his ability to organize and create a system that's plug and play for new coaches and players and the like. That has not been something that has really slowed him down. We've had this story now for what feels like 5 years running about assistants leaving, going elsewhere. To your point from earlier, when these guys are in demand, that obviously speaks highly of your program. But we've seen it time and again. Big time assistants are leaving. Alabama mm-hmm. keeps getting better.
What? So we talk about how it could potentially, and it would need a lot of different elements to go wrong for Alabama with Nick Saban. What is an Alabama team who is built to win big? They pour resources into the program, unlike many and most of all schools in college, major college football. So the resources are there, the reputation is there, the NFL draft factory is there, the high profile element to the program is there. Alabama is as big as it gets. You can't hire the wrong coach, but is there anything specific about Alabama post Nick Saban that worries you? Because I have a couple of things.
Well, yeah.
Primarily, nobody's Nick Saban.
Yeah, that's the number one thing. Nobody's Nick Saban. And it's very difficult to try and match that. To that point, though, we have seen some recent success with Ryan Day taking over for a legend in his own right in Urban Meyer.
One full season.
One full season, right? And I have that written down here. I do want to talk more about that.
Yeah.
But there is some precedent, at least here in the early going, that it seems like that situation is going to work out well. I do think it's going to have to be somebody who has familiarity with the program, who coached under Saban. I don't know, it's probably not Sarkisian at this point, but somebody like that, that the Alabama brass will be comfortable with, who can establish some means of continuity going from Saban serving as that bridge to the next generation. It's going to take somebody who knows that.
Maybe. Yeah, and that's what we've seen across the country with some of these teams, not Notre Dame, but across a number of these teams, there's that familiarity. Lincoln Riley was the coordinator at Oklahoma before taking right. over. Same goes for Ryan Day. Mario Cristobal was in that role at Oregon. And so that certainly helps. And Clemson had a receivers coach in Dabo Swinney before he took over. So that helps. My worry with that is the expectations at Alabama, given what Nick Saban has done, are unmatchable. I mean, Urban Meyer won how many national championships at Ohio State? One? That's matchable. I mean, he had Ohio State playing on a crazy level, but they win the first college football playoff and then don't. So the expectations for keeping the train going, I don't think anybody can possibly succeed at Alabama after Nick Saban, directly after Nick Saban. Whoever it is going to get fired within 4 years. Even if it's Dabo Swinney, he's going to get fired.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's move over to Dabo. Let's talk about Clemson. So I asked this question to Larry Williams from Tiger Illustrated when I had him on the show, I think a year ago. And it was almost verbatim, like, what does it take for Clemson to fall back to earth? And he didn't really have a good answer for it, but his answer was staff changes. If we saw staff exodus, right? So Brent Venables, if he leaves, if the offensive staff leaves, if we've got coaches who are suddenly so in demand that they have to take these jobs, and Dabo is now looking to put in place a new cabinet, what kind of effect would that have? Now, by now, I think it's pretty well known how Dabo got his start at Clemson. He was a relatively inexperienced coach. He got the head role, and he decided that he wanted to allot a lot of his budget to go out and get the best assistant coaches possible to help support him. That model has obviously worked. Clemson's a juggernaut now. But if at this point some of those coaches were to leave, what kind of downstream effect would that have? Clemson is still obviously a place where people would want to go and coach. But any kind of mass turnover, if Brent Venables decides to leave and take a head job at some point in time, you know, so much of that program is built around a really solid defense. If he leaves, what happens? Is that something that can be replaced? We have not seen what Dabo can do with a Saban level of coaching turnover. So that to me seems like the most obvious place to go first here.
What's interesting to me about Clemson is, how patient are they now versus how patient were they with Tommy Bowden winning 7 games every year in the 2000s, 7-8 games, compared to when, and I had to give myself a refresher, but in 2010, Clemson went 6-7. They lost the Meineke Car Care Bowl to USF. Offensive coordinator of that Clemson team, Billy Napier.
Billy Napier.
Fired.
Yep.
Billy Napier, defensive coordinator, Kevin Steele. Kind of a dream staff, if you were to look back on it now in terms of what those guys have done since. And certainly you can point to what Kevin Steele did at Clemson and that which cost him his tenure at Clemson. It just, it wasn't a fit by the end of things. But the patience with an unknown, which Dabo Swinney very much was when they hired him, and then in 2010 when they have a losing record, and since then they've only had double-digit win seasons. So what does that patience look like if they replace Dabo with somebody who's pretty good or interesting or coming from across the country, something like that, and they go 6-7 in their third year? What are the expectations now after, I mean, four of the last 5 years, they've won 14, 14, 15, and 14 games. What does that patience look like? How has Dabo's calculus changed that program? I think the danger coming from the call in the house doesn't really exist because the ACC is at a point where who is legitimately dangerous? Which grouping of teams right now could we even envision being legitimately dangerous? It's hard to see. To me, it's hard to see.
Yeah.
I don't see an existential threat there. I think the existential threat is obviously Dabo leaving. But even if Dabo stays there, it's that he has grown so powerful there that maybe the drive to keep hiring and maintaining the assistants and that culture there, where he's become an emperor figure, not just like Nick Saban has done, but he has done it in a place that essentially hasn't seen this level of success in, 30 years? Danny Ford was good in the 80s, but they were okay with 7-win seasons in the 90s and 2000s. So knowing that and knowing that he has that status, how motivated is Dabo on the throne if he has to do what Nick Saban does, which is completely overhauling his staff every 2.5 years, something like that? That to me is the great unknown. So I think you're right on that.
The other point that I'd bring up is Clemson has had really good quarterback play in recent memory.
Is that a slight against Kyle Parker?
It kind of is, yeah.
He hit 20 home runs and threw 20 touchdowns in a single year.
But if you look at the track record at Clemson of quarterbacks, you know, even going back to Taj Boyd, you know, let's go back 10 years. Taj Boyd.
Cole Stout. Yeah.
Deshaun Watson. obviously, Trevor Lawrence. They have really hit on quarterbacks. It seems like DJ Uiagalelei is going to be fine.
Sure.
But if there is a year where they miss, or 2 years where they miss, I don't know if I'm as confident in Clemson digging out from that as I would be in Alabama.
What level quarterback miss would take them from the playoff to, you know, the Meineke Car Care Bowl, if that still exists?
I mean,
like, because Kelly Bryant was a replacement level quarterback and he took him to the playoff.
Right.
So we are talking. Can we do an exercise that we promise is not insulting, but is definitely going to come off as insulting? Like, I'm looking at this year's quarterback efficiency rankings. These are like the most efficient quarterbacks across the country in conference games. So could Jack Plummer, Purdue, part-time starter, take Clemson to the playoff?
No.
Max Duggan.
I mean, if you're going to throw a TCU quarterback out, I'm probably going to say yes. So
Adrian Martinez.
Oof.
I think all of these answers are probably yes, just because of the ACC, that defense, Travis Etienne. I know it was a different line this year, but I'm just, if you're averaging out
what
recent
about no
Clemson
quarterback?
Talent and results.
Have we considered that? No quarterback at all, just.
Like they start Amari Rodgers.
That's right.
At quarterback. He like an emergency quarterback.
Right.
Chase Bryce. Chase Bryce would not have been able to take Clemson to the playoff to me. But you might have to go pretty far down this. Like Phil Jurkovec could take Clemson to the playoff.
I know. They're so good at all the other positions. But I do feel like if you get like a year or two in there with really down quarterback play. I don't know.
To me, though, there is an element of if Clemson has the 84th most productive quarterback in the nation, but is still surrounded by crazy five-star talent up front, receiver, running back, defense, doing everything, you know, shouldering the load. You're getting the absolute best quarterback transfer to Clemson, aren't you?
More than likely, yeah.
It's not going to last more than a year. JT Daniels is going to Clemson. Whoever that headline transfer portal quarterback is, just can go to Clemson and immediately step in and succeed. So it's hard to see a Clemson quarterback issues for multiple years existing. I think it's the laziness. I think it's the attrition. And I think it's what does Clemson look like in terms of how attractive it is if Dabo leaves for whatever reason. He
Dabo
retires.
Leaves to start like a talk podcast for The Ringer. Could see
Absolutely.
It happening.
How attractive is an open Clemson job? Premium results these past few years. Superpower results. What type of name does Clemson attract? Is it internal with Venables or Tony Elliott? Or are they taking a big swing with Lincoln Riley or whoever? No. I don't know why Lincoln Riley would leave Norman. He's got a very good at home, but
I don't know. All right.
I have no idea. I don't know. Clemson's still like, it's not a headline program in terms of national awareness in the way that Alabama, Ohio State are, even though the results are there. I wonder what type of external name Clemson can attract. To me, it's not as obvious as one of the other schools we're talking about. So that to me is an issue. It's attrition internally and it's externally. What can they attract externally?
Let's go to Oklahoma since you mentioned Lincoln Riley.
Okay.
First things first, as we've been acknowledging with each of our teams here, in all cases, the coach leaving will be somewhat catastrophic. Lincoln Riley going to the NFL will be really catastrophic for
Oklahoma.
You
think so?
I do.
Explain.
I think he is about as good of a candidate as you're going to find who you can get him when he's young and perhaps willing to stay for like 15 years.
Yeah.
It's sort of rare to find those guys anymore. And he seems really happy there. Seems to be building something there. And to lose somebody like that, in effect, you're kind of starting over. So that'd be a big deal. And I also think the way that he has put his brand on the program has been really notable. You know, the other point I have here is if he goes a year or two missing that high level quarterback play, Oklahoma's not good enough on defense. They haven't been to kind of make up the difference for an offense that can't score.
Right.
So I think that's a very obvious thing to point out. Lincoln Riley leaving, going to the NFL, that's a problem. I don't know where the program goes from there. Clearly, a historic program that's going to attract top coaching talent, but to start over with somebody in a different mindset, that's a problem.
And then starting over if you hire internal, like Lincoln Riley was, if you hire, you know, Alex Grinch or somebody like that.
Correct. But is Alex Grinch going to pump out multiple Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks?
No, it's an unsustainable pattern. But yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I think some combination of Lincoln either leaving or missing a few years at the quarterback position, specifically at the quarterback position, since that's really where he's made his hay. Some combination of those two things could be enough to take this program in a much, much different direction.
Oklahoma is the one I might feel the best about, actually, in this situation. Who the hell are you scared of in the Big 12 right now? Unless you play Kansas State literally every week on the schedule, who are you actually scared is going to rise up to become a superpower? I guess you could be concerned about Texas, but kind of been there, done that. We're talking about Steve Sarkisian, who I have high hopes for, given what I've seen out of recent offenses, but being an offensive coordinator is very different. We called him 7-win Steve for a reason.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So Oklahoma is a place that all the resources are there. The pressure to win national championships is not there. The pressure to just win the Big 12, be a national contender, get into the playoff, you know, ring some bells of other powers occasionally or decent teams, whatever. Oklahoma's better positioned to succeed in their conference in the long term than maybe any of these teams, just because of what their schedule looks like. It's a mess of a middle class of flawed teams that do some things well. But right now, Iowa State's interesting. I don't know how long people think Matt Campbell's going to be in Ames. I hope it's for a very long time. But that doesn't seem like a sustainable partnership because he's just going to attract that much attention. So Oklahoma should be able to, whether it's internally, externally, what will help hell to freeze over and see Oklahoma back in the, I guess, the depths of where they were in the Bob Stoops era, which is the Holiday Bowl type games or whatever, Alamo Bowl, whatever the analog is now, what that game is basically not just missing on quarterbacks, but missing on more defensive coordinators. Lincoln Riley was also the guy who kept Mike Stoops on board for, I think, almost assuredly too long. So that's an issue, that if they keep having to win 51-48 games, they're going to keep losing more and more. So the defense has taken nice steps forward, but you lose Alex Grinch and you make another dud of a hire. Well, that's a pretty bad issue. That's hard to overcome, no matter how good you are at attracting the nation's best quarterbacks. But I still think Oklahoma, because of how well set up they are to succeed in the Big 12, will attract a bigger name than Clemson.
I think Clemson's set up to win in the ACC,
but Clemson is Dabo, whereas Oklahoma has had, you know, they've had blips of bad runs, but we're still talking about Bob Stoops as an all-time great college football coach. I think he was just inducted in the Hall of Fame. You talk Barry Switzer, you're talking now Lincoln Riley. Like, it's very clearly a school that's going to set up a coach to succeed. I think it's bad defensive coordinator hires, and I guess Texas fully becoming a full-on superpower.
Well, yeah, that was the other assumption that I was going to push back.
But there's like nine S's at the end of that word guess.
Well, of course, but let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like we've been waiting a while for the Big 12 to the middle class of the Big 12, let's say, to rise up and make it a much deeper conference. Now, look, week in, week out, there's a lot of offense generally in the Big 12, and we've seen strange upsets pretty much every year in that conference. It just happens, the thing. But I can't say for sure that we've really seen that many teams from the so-called middle class bubble up to the point, maybe outside of Iowa State, bubble up to the point where we start to consider them among the upper crust. I feel like the conference needs to get deeper as a whole. At the same time, some of this stuff is going wrong for Oklahoma. You know, threats, again, coming from within the conference to knock them down a peg at the same time that they're struggling at quarterback and their defense is a mess. It's going to take a confluence of events like that. If Lincoln's going to be there for the foreseeable future, they're going to need some combo like that to knock them back a peg.
Does he have that status, by the way? That first name only status, if Lincoln's going to be there?
I mean, on this show, he does, because we're obviously boys with Lincoln Riley. But
yeah, of course. Yeah, it's tough to see. But yeah, I think it's going to come down to defense, the NFL calling Lincoln Riley's name. And I'm trying to think what's specifically problematic about Oklahoma and the open market looking for a coach, because it's been a while. They went after Bob Stoops after he was defensive coordinator at Florida. So I think that the AD's in a really good spot, and I think leadership has given everybody a good reason to trust the Oklahoma front office or whatever we want to call it. I think that's what it is. I think it's some element of maybe Alex Grinch isn't ready if he's the next guy, if Lincoln Riley leaves for wherever next year in the NFL. And it's a bad coach, but it's going to have to be a bad coach in concert with defense, conference, and some level of just, you know, maybe losing the AD. Maybe it's hard to see. It's hard to see that, because that conference just still seems so shallow at the top. Like, how many times has Oklahoma State, how many times has Mike Gundy beaten the Sooners? Twice in 15 years, whatever it is, 16 years?
You want to play a little bit of 3D chess?
Sure.
What if the reason Lincoln Riley leaves and the reason that Oklahoma freezes as part of hell freezing over, of course,
continue,
is because of the college football playoff system?
Huh.
And what I mean by that is because the Big 12 is finding itself in these odd situations where it's left out in the cold. A young, upstart, ambitious coach like Lincoln Riley just does not get the opportunity as much as he would like to play for slash win a national championship.
Right.
So rather than deal with this goofy college system, Lincoln decides, screw it, I'm going to the NFL. I can play it out, play it off the way we're supposed to in a mature sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm leaving Oklahoma.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who loses their great coach is going to suffer, likely. I'm trying to think what's unique to Oklahoma, though. I suppose it is that element of not garnering respect in the Big 12 and being left out in the cold. But internally, is there anybody upset at Oklahoma with where the Sooners stand within the sport?
I can't imagine so. I can't imagine
they've had, it's not like they've gone undefeated and been left out. You lose to Iowa State, you lose to Kansas State. I mean, that's sort of the reality. So, yeah, not only is it Lincoln Riley leaving, but it's a coach coming in, screwing up recruiting in concert with, I think, Texas becoming a superpower. Forever asleep. The Godzilla under the... Does Godzilla sleep way down deep in the ocean? Is that a thing?
I don't know.
I believe it is. So I think that's it. But that's only one game. It's if Texas is a superpower, you're only going 11-1. And you get a chance to beat them again. Okay.
I'm going to go to Ohio State here. So
they're more interesting to me.
I think so. I highlighted Ohio State on my list here as the singular most interesting team in this discussion. Ohio State, unlike the Alabama, Clemson, and Oklahoma discussions, is very different. I don't think we can say for sure that if Ryan Day leaves, they're going to tank, because we only got one full season, really, out of Ryan Day. It was a very good season. And mm-hmm. what we saw from them this year was, again, very good. Justin Fields, very good quarterback. We haven't seen Ryan Day with a quarterback other than Justin Fields. So I think this is actually a lot more to be determined than you might think, just looking at recent expectations, recent results.
I mean, he had Dwayne Haskins as an interim, if we count that, but yeah.
Sure. Like I said earlier, this is an example of a legendary coach leaving, Ryan Day assuming from within.
Mm-hmm.
Year one and year two, pretty good. I think it will absolutely take the rise of someone else in the Big Ten East to counterbalance Ohio State and siphon off recruits. Now,
but does that knock them to 8-4?
It doesn't knock them to 8-4. No.
Right.
But you got to start somewhere. And I think the immediate starting point is Ohio State not winning the Big Ten championship or Big Ten East every year. Got to start there. Now, can Penn State get there? Maybe. Maybe. Can Michigan get there? Feeling a lot less confident about that one as of late. But those would be the two obvious candidates in the East to jump up. Maybe Michigan State puts something together a couple years in the future. But in the short term, I think it's either Penn State or Michigan to rise up and start knocking on the door. I will be very interested to see what happens this year. Not because I think it's the start of any great downfall for the Buckeyes, but Justin Fields is going pro. And we are going to have an opportunity to see that new quarterback situation mm-hmm. and see what Ryan Day can do. One of the other things that we've seen recently with Ohio State's been very, very good. Again, I can't emphasize that enough. But we've seen some deficiencies. One of the things that Ryan Day came in and did year one was fix the defense, because the defense in the last year of Urban Meyer was sort of a mess. So mm-hmm. he came in, he fixed some things, he made them a better school. But I'm curious to see if he can continue to steer clear of those deficiencies now in the short term, because eventually, if you have enough of that, it starts to add up. I feel like with Day, as compared to some of these others, we could talk about Mario Cristobal in a little bit, but sure. Day especially I don't feel like we have enough data to really make an accurate assessment on what it would take for them to freeze over.
So you almost think there is a very slight chance, and I don't think either one of us believe this, but there's a slight chance that there is some Mark Helfrich, Larry Coker,
yeah,
guy after the guy.
I do.
Keeps
I really
it going,
do.
Keeps it going for a stretch, but not necessarily on the level of an all-time predecessor.
It's diminishing returns, right? And we've seen it time and again. It doesn't mean Ryan Day's a bad coach. And you're right. I don't think that. I don't think that he's going to go that route. But I think it's a bit of an incomplete right now. He happened to take over at Ohio State. Maybe at the time that they were getting like the best quarterback to ever go to Ohio State in Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. You can say what you want about that. And they were good elsewhere, produced a lot of great defensive talent, no doubt. But they were gettable on defense this year.
Sure.
Watch that Indiana game. They're gettable, right? Like they weren't
so good. Watch the national championship. Yeah.
Watch the national championship. But yeah, how much you can hold that against them going against an Alabama remains to be seen. But they're not as bulletproof. And I just am not totally convinced that Ryan Day is just going to be on this glide path to the playoff every year.
Yeah. So there are a couple things that are interesting to me about Ohio State, because infrastructure wise, they are so well equipped. The recruiting department and just the sheer volume of people that goes into Ohio State winning is crazy impressive. They have to recruit in a way kind of nationally. You look at the footprint of this last amazing recruiting class, and there's not a ton of Midwest footprint. So they have to go out there. There has to be charisma. There has to be that effort, and I think there will be. But I think the danger is in, well, one, Ryan Day has coached in the NFL, and so I don't know what that appeal is long term, but if Ohio State keeps blitzing through the Big Ten and losing in it's close, big fashion, whatever, to the powers in college football, I don't know, maybe he's going to feel like he hit his ceiling at Ohio State. And then it basically just takes a coach to come in and say, we're going to play smash mouth football and get away from what attracted players to Ohio State, and all of a sudden you're turning off players in Arizona or Georgia or North Carolina who want to play a very specific way. I think that's an element to it. I'm not really worried about Ohio State playing in the Big Ten and not necessarily playing in huge games, as Michigan and Penn State are now kind of down and there's no real obvious team in the Big Ten that is shaping up to be a long-term rival near their level. I don't think that's a huge issue, because I think, honestly, these kids just want to be developed into NFL players, and Ohio State's a great place to do that, and at a number of different, or every single position. So I'm not terribly worried about that. It's more right now about where Ryan Day's eyes are, who Ryan Day actually is long term, because what we know about Urban Meyer and Nick Saban is that they are just built differently.
Yeah.
They are cyborgs. Nick Saban has handled things way better off the field than Urban Meyer did. But to be able to maintain that level of excellence is historically incredibly rare. Ryan Day might be that guy, or he might just be, as you mentioned, a good coach, but not an all-time coach. You're set up to succeed at Ohio State, but you also have to bring in that your own ability to maintain. So that to me is still a giant question mark, is the Ryan Day element. And what does he look like with attrition? He inherited a lot of these guys. Now, he lose Jeff Hafley. And he brought in a couple of his own guys. I think the guys from Michigan, right? Greg Madison and Al Washington. Madison just retired. So what does Ohio State look like in terms of Ryan Day's connections and ability to attract coordinators? Because as good as Ohio State looks to be for the foreseeable future, that just means they're going to be losing dudes for the foreseeable future. So the attrition thing seems very real, especially if you're hiring assistants from other parts of the country, say. That's worrisome. There is absolutely no proof at this moment that Ryan Day in year 4 or 5 can keep making incredible decisions. Because as we saw with Urban Meyer, he made some bad assistant hiring decisions.
Sure. Well, yeah, exactly. And I think the risk is always a little bit higher, clearly, when you've got a newer coach.
I don't think Ohio State fans look fondly back at the Greg Schiano defenses all the time.
No, not all the time.
Yeah.
This is a big year for Day. This is a really big year for Ryan Day. And obviously, look, there's a lot more to it than just the quarterback position, but this is a guy who, to your earlier point, has been really good at coaching quarterbacks, came in with a really good one to help lead him through years one and two.
Who's the guy after Ryan Day, by the way?
If
he takes, like, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals job, or he takes, I don't know what NFL jobs might become and open soon or something like that, the Texans job.
I could see that being a Matt Campbell.
Jeff Hafley?
You really like Jeff Hafley.
Promising? Love Jeff Hafley.
I don't know.
Yeah. Could be Matt Campbell. Could be Jeff Hafley. It's interesting names.
Let's go rapid fire real quick here through three other schools. Let's start with your Oregon Ducks, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
First off,
we've seen it recently.
Yeah, we've seen it recently.
They went 4-8 a few years ago.
Are you confident in the crystal ball era at this point that he's got them on the straight and narrow, that there's a nice upward trajectory? We talked earlier, Tyler Shuck is transferring out. Anthony Brown might be the starter. That does not leave me feeling uber confident, but I do still feel like Oregon's done a really good job in the recruiting trail and that crystal ball is building towards something greater.
Yeah, I think all signs point to a nice run. The issues are, well, they lost this year to Cal and Oregon State, inferior talent teams that put together a better win and took advantage of Oregon mistakes like pretty good teams do. So he has not built a killer on the field. Now, they had a ton of opt-outs, whatever, but I'm not here to excuse things. At the end of the day, you got to win your games. I think the quarterback issue should be okay. The problem to me with Oregon and why they come back down to earth, because I think he's always going to recruit well, and his assistant hires have been very good. And Joe Moorhead and Andy Avalos. Now we'll see with Tim DeRuiter and whoever is after Joe Moorhead, who I assume is not going to be terribly long for Eugene, maybe another year, maybe two, just because he's from somewhere else. I think the issue is going to be an element of being too stubborn in wanting too much control over, in his case, the offense. And Oregon is just, is Eugene, Oregon going to attract an A-list coach if Mario Cristobal takes Oklahoma or Georgia or something big, if he wins big at Oregon, Miami, who knows? What level coach does that attract? Matt Rhule chose Baylor over Oregon. Willie Taggart chose Oregon. They paid him well, and he left right away to go back home to take a dream job for 2 years. So how well can Oregon both attract? Chip Kelly was an internal hire as offensive coordinator. Mike Bilotti had a West Coast footprint and was an offensive coordinator at Oregon. He was internal. What does Oregon look like in terms of an open market coaching hire? I think it's a B-plus destination in terms of how attractive it is to the best head coaches and coordinators across the country. But I don't think it's a no-brainer to pick up your family and move to Eugene, Oregon. As somebody who did that, I don't think it's a no-brainer. Not my family. That would have been weird. But it's a medium-sized town in central West Oregon. It's kind of far away from the hotbeds of college football, especially with the Pac-12 where it is right now. So I think that's ultimately what it is. It's as popular as Oregon is with some younger players and as good as they've built their reputation as a cool place to play football, in practice, what are they able to attract in terms of a head coach? That's the worry to me as an Oregon fan, why they go back to becoming a Holiday Bowl team. So it was a good internal hire of Mario Cristobal that seems to be working out really well. It's tough. It still, to me, is just very tough, because if you don't have somebody like that, you either need that like schematic genius like Chip Kelly was, or a guy who can attract talent and, you know, players and coaches to Eugene, which Mario Cristobal is. If you're just a pretty good coach, you are going to just go to pretty good bowl games at Oregon. It's hard to overcome that.
Yeah, and you know, I think back to the Chip Kelly era, and it was just so unique. It was so unique that it gave instant cred to that program. People wanted to play for Oregon.
Yeah.
Because of the uniqueness, because of the offense, and because it was so flashy.
He was pouring points on NFL defenses in LA, Pete Carroll defenses, pouring points, beating them up.
And Cristobal's just not that kind of coach. He's just not.
Right.
But that doesn't mean he can't have a lot of success. And it also doesn't mean that the early returns haven't been there, because I think they have. So obviously some of the schools we're talking about at the end here are a little bit more prone to spiraling out. Does not seem like Oregon's trending in that direction, but something to keep
an eye on. I mean, it's a lot shakier a net right now in Eugene than it is in probably Tuscaloosa, Columbus, Clemson, Norman. Much shakier net.
The other school we've got listed here is Notre Dame.
Hit me.
Brian Kelly leaving is an interesting thing. It's interesting for everybody. So I'll just sort of omit it. And I'll talk more about the, I think, structure of the program right now. There's a lot of pressure, whether they admit it or not, about Brian Kelly winning the big one. And we saw the big time win in November over Clemson at home, backup quarterback for Clemson, James Skalski out for Clemson. But you win that game in overtime. That was a big deal. Big deal for the program. You go in the ACC championship game, you get drilled by Clemson. Play in the playoffs, you get drilled against Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many more situations like that are in Brian Kelly. I don't know how long it is until eventually the boosters and those within the program just get fed up with not winning that big one. Notre Dame very much is the victim of its own expectations. It's always been that way. Now that they're here, the expectation is that Notre Dame is going to reclaim its former glory. And I hate to break it to folks, but that is just not realistic. That's not reality.
What is that a reference to? Like, what era? Oh. Because as I can tell right now, Notre Dame has won four straight double-digit seasons.
For sure, but I'm talking national championships.
Okay.
I'm talking national championships.
So early 90s Notre Dame?
Sure. Sure. Okay. Late 80s. Like
late teams, 80s, early 90s.
Teams that were just giant killers and consistently in the hunt, realistically in the hunt for national championships. If they don't get there soon, I'm very curious to see what kind of effect that has on the program over the short to medium term. And if that would be enough to force Kelly out. Force Kelly into a state of mind like, what is it with these people? what do I have to do? I've built a good program. What do I have to do? Notre Dame, like you said, has been a double-digit win team now pretty consistently, and they've been solid. The way that he's built this team has been rock solid, but much to the point of what you pointed out with Oregon, you know, there are always a few position groups or a bad coach hire away from things feeling like they're getting out of control. I remember back a couple of years when the quarterback position was unsettled. I went 4-8 one year. Remember? That was a
tire fire. Yeah.
That season. Notre Dame, maybe more so than any of these other schools, has been at that very questionable level recently. And, you know, Kelly, to his credit, he was able to pull it together. But I just think it underscores the point that sometimes in these situations, when you're not a juggernaut like an Alabama or a Clemson, all it takes is a few things to start to go sideways to give the impression that the program is caving, to give the impression that a change is needed. I don't know how likely that is, but I'm very curious to watch this season. I'm very curious to see what happens at quarterback this season, because that's the face of the program. Ian Book was there for 3 years, love him or hate him. He was very consistent. He won a lot of games. Whether it's Jack Cohn or Tyler Buckner or somebody else, we're going to have to see now what Tommy Rees can do with the new quarterback, what Brian Kelly can do with the new quarterback. This is not a program that has a whole lot of a recent track record developing that position. Now, I think they've got depth elsewhere, and they're going to be very good along the lines again this season. I hope that the skill position out wide will be better and facilitate a much better year at quarterback in the passing sense. But I think if we're talking about how does this come off the swivel, I think it could ultimately come off the swivel with Notre Dame and its own base, its own fan base, its own booster base being the ones that eventually drive the coach out, force a new start. I don't know who would take that job. We've talked about that one until we're blue in the face. And that new start maybe not being as promising as one would hope.
I mean, Notre Dame fired three straight coaches, right?
Yeah.
So not only would Brian Kelly leaving, who's done a very good job there, hurt, but the track record, and obviously these are different people making different decisions, but in terms of Notre Dame, who Notre Dame attracts, Bob Davie doesn't work out. Ty Willingham doesn't work out. Charlie Weiss does not work out. There's something about Notre Dame. Maybe it's baked into the DNA unofficially. Brian Kelly has a 4-8 year in 2016. Charlie Weiss in 2007, they go 3-9. Ty Willingham has a 5-7 year. Bob Davie has a 5-7 year, 1999. The big difference between Notre Dame and the rest of these schools, besides being independent, is it's a private parochial school.
Right.
It's different recruiting to Notre Dame. They've recruited some very good classes, but when you recruit a top 18 class one year, like Brian Kelly did, I think, a couple years ago, as compared to a top 5 class, if that class doesn't work out, if that class doesn't pan out, that's a pretty big issue. And hasn't been able to find a quarterback. And now that hasn't, and when I say a quarterback, I mean a really strong quarterback. If you believe that Ian Book was that, that's fine. But obviously in bigger games in December, January, it didn't really work out with Ian Book and Notre Dame's offense. So there's that element to things with Brian Kelly. So if Brian Kelly's there, how does Notre Dame careen back down to earth? Well, it's hits in recruiting. It's saying it's top recruits, top quarterbacks saying, I don't necessarily want to play for a private parochial school in the middle of Indiana that hasn't developed a quarterback into an NFL caliber draft pick. In quite some time, depending on what you think about DeShone Kizer and Jimmy Clausen and their NFL careers, their Notre Dame careers. So what Notre Dame's been able to do has been crazy impressive. But a combination of quarterback, maybe some of the schools on their schedule, be it ACC schools or the traditional powers that they tend to schedule in, you know, USC and Michigan, whatever. If those teams get better and then that paired with a couple of those ACC programs, Notre Dame's on the rise. Clemson certainly is at an incredibly high level. We'll see about Miami and Florida State. If all of a sudden, outside of Notre Dame on the schedule, if that element improves and Brian Kelly is somebody who hired Brian Van Gorder to be a defensive coordinator.
It is true, yes.
So Brian Kelly has a dud hire of a coordinator in him. Like, maybe you learn from that, you don't make that mistake again. But Brian Kelly is capable of making an absolute dud hire of a coordinator. So that to me is also kind of worrisome in terms of Meineke car care levels.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's again,
he corrected that emphatically with Elko and Clark Lee.
He's done a great job. And I think Marcus Freeman's another strong hire.
Sure.
Coaches are allowed to make mistakes. It's how they recover from mistakes that's really important. And I'm with you. I just, the margin for error is, it's just different at a place like a Notre Dame.
Sure.
It's just different because there are some of the variables. You've got the high academic standards. You've got, you know, what do kids want to go to Indiana to play? Like, all these things that you've mentioned, I think, are very, very true. And so it's a different situation. There are subtleties.
My brother went to college in Indiana. I had a great time visiting him. Went to Purdue. It's great.
All right. Final one, Georgia. We're running long over time.
I'm looking at Brian Kelly's coordinator hires over the years. Mike Denbrock.
Denbrock was a guy he brought with him from Cincinnati.
Chip Long was an improvement, but didn't work out long term. Okay.
I think that's actually
something to pay attention to. But yeah, I think you're right about Marcus Freeman. I think he will have every opportunity to keep Notre Dame's recent defensive success going.
Final one, Georgia. Kirby Smart takes over, seemingly overnight starts to turn that program around. Now, it's important to say turn around is relative because yeah. Mark Richt was fine. Mark Richt was decidedly above Meineke car care levels.
Oh, I like this as like a college football Hall of Fame induction introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Richt was fine. Polite applause.
He was fine.
The name of Mark Richt's first album, Polite Applause. Continue.
But Kirby Smart comes in, takes him to a different level. I'm curious to get your thoughts here.
On Georgia?
Obviously, if Kirby Smart leaves, you know, that's the low-hanging fruit. But
Yeah.
Yeah, thoughts.
That's a place I mean, George is a place that's set up to succeed like crazy. I mean, Athens is a great town. The school puts a ton of resources into the program. The SEC East is not, you know, wall-to-wall killers. Like, it's a place that's built to succeed in a way that many schools aren't. But they're a bad coach. They're probably always going to hire. They're always going to bring in at least a good quarterback. They're going to have good quarterback options in normal seasons. Georgia's a harder place. To me, it's almost like Norman. It's a harder place. The expectations are there without recent results. So I think patience is going to be a huge issue. I mean, they were very patient with Mark Richt, who had a really good amount of success. But they were patient until they're like, okay, this has run its course. But what do they look like now that they've gotten used to top 2-3 recruiting classes? They make a national championship game.
That's my point.
They're winning the East, you know, most seasons of most recent years. Obviously, Florida took it this year. But expectation-wise, patience-wise, I think there's this sense of Kirby could be in Gus Malzahn was far more inconsistent in terms of on-field results. But I think there is that element of Georgia saying, we have hit our ceiling with Kirby Smart, that we can't break past the Alabama glass. And I think it would be a mistake. And then to go out and, you know, take a chance with somebody new, I think there is that. I think it's a patience hubris thing with Georgia. For sure.
All right. Well, look, solidverbal@gmail.com. Write in. Let us know your thoughts. Longer show than usual here, but
that's okay.
Got a little bit into it today. That's fine. Verballers.com, again, is the Patreon. Don't forget. Got a fun off-topic show coming, a bonus show. Content only available for our Patreon subscribers that we're going to drop a little bit later on this week.
The sweet content of me talking about a travel team basketball team I was on in 1993.
I have a litany of stories, Dan, that I think you will find exciting, including me on the basketball court.
Oh my God.
There was a moment on the basketball court that drove me away permanently from basketball forever. And it wasn't me blowing my shoulder out about 6 years ago. That was different.
Yeah.
But back in the day, Ty Hildebrandt setting up shop deep in the corner, trying to pop a three.
Usually, why are you giving away this content?
I'm not giving anything away. The content gets better, I promise you.
Okay.
On Friday, bonus content.
Did you have, I want you to tease this out, so don't answer definitively. Did you have a Freddie Prinze Jr., Jessica Biel moment on a baseball field?
A what?
Freddie Prinze Jr. Summer catch? Ty.
I'm aware. Are you saying, did I leave the mound to go catch a girl at the airport?
Did you ever frolic after hours on a baseball field?
No. No.
No, no, hold on. Ty, you got to tease it out. I don't know. You might want to wait and find out.
You may want to check out our content.
Yeah.
All right.
I like summer catch.
Thank you to one and all for playing along with us here. Stay safe wherever you may be. Try to stay warm. Hopefully hell is not freezing over on you. It's about to do so here. Warm like a half inch ice. That'll be great.
Yeah.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, thanks so much for downloading, for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay warm. In the meantime, until next time, stay solid.
Peace.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.